This conversation between Walter Langford and Red Shanedienst is being taped in Red's home in St. Louis on December 12th, 1987.
Would you like a cup of coffee? I should have before.
Well, I see you were born in Germantown, Illinois. Is that like 40 or 50 miles from here?
That's a little better than 40 miles. You can drive it in about an hour right now.
Is that where you started playing ball?
Well, everybody played ball in Germantown. That was a big thing. You had nothing else to do, really. There was not that much basketball. We did play some, but that was a big thing.
Yeah. All right. And then how did you get into organized ball?
Well, we played, like you said, every Sunday. Mm-hmm. And worked during the week when we weren't in school. And They had a great guy over there by the name of Ed Roach. He was a great organizer. He kept the Clinton County and St. Clair County leagues going every Sunday, and they had some pretty good ball players. And other than that, they tried to practice a little bit, but never did have that much time. And I did start in that when I was about 16 years old. They put me in, and then after going to school a while, I went played professionally.
Where'd you start off?
I started out in Union City, Tennessee.
Mm-hmm.
I put a highway through there right now. I think it's Highway 51. We still have some fans come from Union City, Tennessee here in St. Louis, and they holler at me. They'll come in about four or five times a year and holler, "Hey, Red, we're back again."
So good.
Watched you get started.
What classification was that?
That was D-ball. If you went any lower, you went back home.
Yeah, there wasn't any lower.
Yeah. No.
And from there?
Well, from there, that was called the Kitty League, and that broke up that year. It was in 1942, in the middle of 42 when I signed up.
Yeah.
And I went to Albany, Georgia, the Georgia Florida League, finished the season there. And after that, that following year, that was my first year professionally. It was only a half a year that I played.
Mm-hmm.
In 1943, I went to Lynchburg, Virginia, in B League, and I was there for the spring, and they started the season. And Buddy Blattner was a shortstop in Rochester, and Pepper Martin was a manager at the time in Rochester, and they needed a shortstop. And of course, I've only played D ball and just started in B ball now. And they called me up, and I can remember Pepper Martin. Of course, I was pretty skinny at that time. I weighed about 154 pounds, 155 pounds. And I knocked on the door that Sunday morning when I got in. And he says, they answered the door. They were having a meeting right before they went out on the ball field, I guess.
And yeah.
The trainer says, "Here's your new ball player." And Martin, he looked at around a little bit, and I could hear him say, he says, "Hell, I don't need another bad boy, I need a shortstop." I was pretty frail and small at the time.
Yeah.
But I did lead the league in hitting that year. I led the league in hitting and the rest of that year in Rochester. That was AAA.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
And then after that, I went to service. And one thing I have to say, I remember one big thing when I was in Rochester. We played a doubleheader. And I come up to hit for the first time. You know, Syracuse and Newark and all of them were pretty close. And they were great baseball fans. And there were some people sitting in the stands. And they got all over me. And I had never been in the state of New York before in my life. And I've never been on a ball field, especially in Rochester. And they were getting on. They got on everybody. And I walked up to hit them. I said, "Oh, what the hell am I getting into?" But I got by and everything, and there was fans from Syracuse or whoever we were playing at that time, and they were hollering at everybody, and I said, "Oh, what's this all about?" So I never paid any attention. I think that was a big lesson for me, just not to pay any attention. And
well, that's the best lesson to learn.
Yeah.
Now, after that season, you went into the service?
I went back at the beginning of 1944. I went into service in 44.
Yeah.
And I was in there for the whole year, and I came out right before spring training in 1945, and the Cardinals just put me on their list. We went to Carroll, Illinois.
When you were at Rochester, were you already in the Cardinal system?
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
See, I signed in.
Same before you went to Albany, even. Yeah.
Mr. Rickey and Mr. Branch, Branch Rickey and Braden, Mr. Braden, signed me up. And
when you were growing up there in Germantown, did you ever have any dreams of that happening?
Well, I guess I did to a certain extent.
That is where you would have preferred to go if you were going to the majors.
Right.
Yeah.
And the thing was, I said to myself, I have to do something, and I was going to give myself at least 3 years in the minor leagues if I ever got signed up. That was my biggest thought of anything. I was going to give it 3 years, and if I couldn't advance from where I was, from D-ball to double-A or to A to double-A and right on up, if I wasn't making any progress in 3 years, I'd have been looking for something else to do, but I was pretty fortunate. I only spent a year and a half in a minor league.
Yeah, you came up fast.
Mm-hmm.
Faster than they do even these days.
Yeah.
Yeah, and your first season was 45, and your manager was old Billy Southworth.
Billy Southworth.
And I'm looking to see, that year you played the outfield most of the time.
Yeah.
Was that because?
They had no outfielders. A lot of the guys didn't get back from the service.
True.
And they needed an outfielder.
Yeah, Marion wasn't back yet.
No, Marion was playing.
I don't mean Marion, I mean Terry Moore.
Terry Moore wasn't back. Musial was still in the service. And Slaughter, and a whole bunch of them. So they really had infield.
They had Emil Verben at second base.
Emil Verben and Marion and Kurowski.
Yeah. Ray Sanders.
And Ray Sanders. So they. I went out to play the outfield, fooling around out there, because I wanted to make the club somehow.
You're darn right.
And Mike Gonzalez, he said to Billy.
He was coaching me that
He was coaching. Yeah. He hit me fungos and he watched me shag balls off the bat and batting practice. Yeah. And he said, you don't need another outfielder. He says, you've got one. Sometimes it pays to have the coaches watch.
You're doggone right.
And go out and try it. I wanted to stay on the club. It's a big thing.
Yeah. But you preferred the infield.
Well, I wanted to play no matter what.
Because the next year, I think you went to the
infield. Yeah. And in the meantime, that year in 45, I did play some short. I played third. Anybody, Marion's back was bothering him, I come in and played short.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you were 10 games short, one at second, and so forth. All right, that was a good first season, and 278, which is respectable enough. Then the next year, first of all, you finished three games behind the Cubs. And it wouldn't have taken much to win it that year, would it?
No, they got they got Barroi from the Yankees, which helped
them.
They needed another pitcher, and
that helped
him. He couldn't beat us, but he beat everybody else.
He sure did. They've done that twice now when they picked up Sutcliffe.
Yes.
4 years ago. Now, did you get a new manager in 46?
Eddie Dyer
came in.
Eddie Dyer.
Did they fire Southworth or did he?
Southworth went on to Boston Braves.
Uh-huh.
But they didn't fire him. They just, Billy made the change himself, I think, if I'm correct.
Yeah. Doesn't matter in the least. And that year, you guys got into the series. You beat the Dodgers in the playoff. Do I remember that it was two straight games you won from them?
That's right.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, we won two straight games, and it wound up where they had to. We were beating them pretty good, and then something happened. They were scoring a few runs in the ninth inning, and the big first baseman, I don't even remember him, Schultz, big right-handed hitter, he came by and he could hit the ball out of the ballpark.
Sure.
And it went down, I think, to 3-2 to him. A base hit there, we'd have been in trouble. And if he'd hit a home run, they'd have tied the game. So we did win it.
Who was on the mound for you?
Harry Burkine.
Oh, well, you were in about as good hands as you could be at that point.
Yeah.
Dodgers got a history of losing some playoffs. The famous 51 series and
Yeah.
The Giants beat them in...
Thompson hit that home run.
61, I think. In 51, Thompson hit the most exciting home run in history. And then in 61, Mary, I'm Walter Langford.
Nice
so pleased to meet you.
I didn't want to interrupt.
Well, that's all right.
So I'm going on my way out, Red, so I'll see you later.
Goodbye.
Don't forget to take that for you.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Nice to meet you.
And likewise, Mary. In 61, they lost 2 out of 3 playoff to the Giants. Billy Pierce was a part of it when he
was
gone over from the White Sox, I remember. All right, and the Red Sox were kind of a surprise getting in that into the series that year because I think they'd finished last season before or something like that.
Yeah, I think they were playing the Braves. Had a close game, weren't they? The Braves, or they had a win. They're playing Cleveland, weren't they?
That was in 48.
That was 48, yeah. That's right.
They finished 12 games ahead of Detroit.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but... No, I'm thinking of the time they won in 64 when they came from nowhere. 64 or 66, I guess. You played them in 66, too.
Well, 67.
64, you played 60.
Yankees, we played. No, yeah, 64, we played the
67,
Yankees.
You played the Red Sox. That's right. And then
68, that was the
Tigers.
Time when Lombardi had to pitch the last ball game for them to win.
Right.
And then that kind of set us up a little better where we didn't have to face him more than 2 times, and I knew he wouldn't have his great rest.
All right, we'll get to that later. Now, in the, how many years were you before you changed? 11 years before you moved over to Milwaukee, I think it was?
Yeah, I went to Giants first.
Yeah, that was briefly, though.
Yeah, that was just from the 15th till of June till the end. And
mm-hmm.
then following year in 57, I went to the...
Yeah, were you traded to the Giants? For whom?
Was Bill Sarney, Jackie Brandt, Dick Littlefield and myself went for Elvin Dark, pitcher by the name of Little, Whitey Lockman, I think that's what it was, and somebody else.
Yeah. Sounds like a fairly even trade.
Yeah, well, they needed a shortstop here, and they wanted Elvin to play short, Blassingame was here, and they had an experienced shortstop when they got Elvin. They thought they would. They had a good chance to win the pennant. And the following year, they come close, but I went to Milwaukee.
Yeah.
I won it there.
Yeah. What do you remember most or best about those 10 years or so here with the Cards as a player? Anything stand out in your mind?
Well, I'd have to say the big thing that would stand out in my mind is when I came up in 45, and then in 1946 when we won. I did have a year under my belt, but when you had veterans like Terry Moore and Musial and Marion and Karofsky and so many of the other guys, you know, it made it a little easier for me. I think I was the only rookie really on the ball club at that time, and then I moved to second base. And
remember your first game?
No, I really don't.
Well,
I remember one thing about the first game is that you're a little nervous, you know, up until
Till it starts.
Till it starts, and then after the first pitch is pitched, I was relaxed after
just
that.
Another ball game.
And then you wonder when you're going to get your first base hit, and when you get your first base hit, everything is on an even.
Then
field.
You got it made, yep. How about Dyer as a manager? Was he one of the better ones?
Well, he was a good manager, yes. We had a pretty good ball club at that time, and he was... a good manager. He was ahead of our minor league system, I think, before he came up and then managed in the minor leagues. And they had him come up, and yes, he was disciplined with the ball players.
Yeah.
It's a little different then than it is today.
You know it. Yeah, all of them tell me that. And Stanky showed it when he took the manager's job at Texas and lasted one game and said, I can't stand this.
I played for Eddie here, too.
Yeah. I was getting to that. You first had a season under Marty Marion.
Right, that's right.
He told me that the main reason he left was that he couldn't get along with Fred Tsai. So he got out of there and went over to the Browns, which was jumping from the frying pan into the fire.
Yeah.
And then Stanky followed him. I saw Stanky manage the White Sox. I was, of course, there at Notre Dame and go and see the White Sox all the time. Mm-hmm. And I think he was a good manager, but the players there were complaining that he took the bat out of their hands too often and they weren't able to swing at a pitch if they knew they could hit, as they put it. We all know you can hit one you don't swing at.
Yeah.
Anyway, he was a fiery type, and
yeah, Eddie was a fiery type. He was fiery here, and a lot of ball players didn't like him, of course.
I'm sure.
There's a lot of ball players don't like all managers, or
that's
somebody.
Right. Especially one that's cracking the whip on them.
That's right.
That's yeah. Like about, there are not too many of those left, but Dick Williams is one of them.
Yeah.
Players pretty soon get to have a very deep-seated dislike for Dick, because he's cracking the whip. Well, you didn't have any more wins while you were here of the pennant, did you?
No.
As a player, I mean.
No.
Stanky was relieved by Walker in 55, and during the season. And then you went to the Giants. First of all, when the 56 season started, Fred Hutchison came in as a manager.
Fred was a manager.
Yeah.
Good manager.
Oh, yeah. Everybody says
yeah,
that.
Yeah, very good.
And then when you went to the Giants, it was Rigney. He managed a long time, but he, as I see it, he never had notable success.
Well, our ball club over there in New York wasn't that good a ball club,
in
really.
46?
No, we...
56, I mean.
56. We... Yeah. We had some pretty good ball players.
You had some names.
Yeah.
Bill White, Don Mueller, Willie Mays, Johnny Antonelli, among others.
Yeah.
We
just didn't make it. I don't think we could keep that infield together too much, you know,
mm-hmm.
with a lot of the infielders playing. And I had a bad arm at that particular time, too.
Well, let's see. Yeah, you finished way down the line, like sixth.
Yeah, we were down there.
Mm-hmm. Despite those names. Now, that's, yeah, that was Mays' third season. He was a rookie in 54.
Mm-hmm.
No. He was a rookie in 51. Yeah, because he was the next guy due up when Thompson hit his home run.
Yeah, I guess you're right.
Yeah, and they say he was scared stiff because he didn't want all that responsibility at that moment. In fact, there are those who claim that Dressen, despite never walked the winning run on base, that Dressen would have been smart to put Thompson on.
Well, you know, a lot of times you're destined to win no matter what happens.
That's right.
So who hits or what pitcher comes in there, a lot of times it just happens that way.
It's in the cards, yep, yep. All right, now, when you went to Milwaukee, was that a trade?
Yes, it was a trade. I went to Milwaukee for O'Connell, second baseman.
I remember him.
Ray Crone,
yeah.
And Bobby Thompson.
Uh-huh. Now, Thompson had slowed down. He broke a leg or something.
That's right.
And never recovered.
That's right.
Yeah.
And Ray Crone was a pretty good
pretty
looking,
fair pitcher.
Yeah, prospect. Mm-hmm. And, was it Danny O'Donnell?
Danny O'Connell, I think.
O'Connell, yeah.
Maybe whether I can find it here in a hurry, but it doesn't matter. Anyway, you got over there in 57, was it?
57.
Mm-hmm. And found Fred Haney in charge. How
right.
was Fred?
Fred was great. I liked him. I knew Fred when he managed Pittsburgh, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I used to see him quite often, talk mm-hmm. with him, you know, in and out.
Yeah.
Fred was one guy that wanted me over there, I know that.
Good.
Duffy Lewis, the old traveling secretary,
yeah,
remember him?
Yeah.
That was Duffy. Duffy had said after they got me, he says, man, he says, I was looking for you to come over here. He says, now, he says, don't let me down, Red. He said, Duffy said, he says,
I'm sure.
I'm one guy, he said, that you could help me win the pennant here.
My feeling is that was exactly what happened, Red. They needed to get things set there in that spot, and a leader type on the player and on the field, and it paid off. And then you pulled the upset in a way. I mean, any time somebody beat the Yankees in the series, in those days it was kind of an upset.
Yeah.
And Burdett was the big hero. Sometimes pitchers will emerge in the series who haven't been all that great during the season. He had a good season, but Lolich, I think, hadn't had that outstanding season when he took three.
He does three.
Yeah, and on down the line. But you had obviously quite a lineup there with Burdett and Spahn and Buell and then Torrey and Logan and yourself and Matthews and Aaron Bruton, Crandall. The game I saw played there, it could have been that year, but anywhere between 57 and 60. I had a daughter and her husband living in Milwaukee at that time, and I went up and saw a few games. He was an electrical engineering prof, came back to teach. Graduated Notre Dame, came back a few years later, and is still there. He's been an associate dean, mm-hmm. engineering. And in the game, the things I remember most are that both Willie Mays and Hank Aaron hit home runs the day I was there. One day I was there. I saw some others. Saw Matthews' club one out one day.
I'd have to say that was, Ed Don McMahon, who just passed on as...
Great
as a relief pitcher, outstanding.
Yeah.
And then he had Hurricane Hazel come in. That was in 58 when he came in and he hit. But I'd have to say that's the best ball club I was ever affiliated with as far as talent. We had everything. We had pitching, hitting, catching, no matter how you look at it. We had a great ball club.
Yeah.
As you can see, you look down the line, how many of them guys are in the Hall of Fame?
That's right. And they put it together for several seasons in a row there, either winning or coming close. What stands out in that 57 series other than Burdett's three wins? Anything special?
Well, you think about it, before it starts with the Yankees coming in, of course, a lot of our guys were experienced. They played for a long time.
That's right.
And, they were supposed to beat us pretty good. And we managed to beat them, which was a big thing as far as remembering anything about the series. I don't remember. I did get hurt. I wasn't feeling good, and I pulled a muscle in my leg.
Mm-hmm.
And I was out of that.
You got into five games.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And I wasn't all up to par at that particular mm-hmm. time. That's when I had got that TB right after that following
year. That was my next question. Any idea how that crept up on you?
Nope, sure don't. And I was having a hard time.
What were the first symptoms you noticed? And
I was tired. Just all around.
Did the doctors... catch it right away, or?
Well, once I came here to St. Louis, I was always had trouble with my arm for a number of years, and Dr. Miranda, who's a radiologist here, he mm-hmm. took X-rays of me, and when he did, he says, "You better go see somebody," and he took X-rays again,
mm-hmm.
and he said, "Well, you got something there. Let's just hope it's TB and nothing else."
Mm-hmm.
And he told me right flat, and he's still around. I see him.
Yeah.
And anyhow, I went out and seen a doctor, Dr. Warner, and they put me in a hospital, and then he finally operated on me.
I was going to ask, did they operate funny?
Yeah, they wanted me. Dr. Warner, I don't think, would have let me play
mm-hmm.
anymore. He says, unless to get operated. I says, well, I still want to try and play. Of course, I was getting up in age. And
mm-hmm.
Dr. Lucido, who did the operation, He said I'd be off. He'd be careful about how he'd cut the muscle, so I did stay on the operating table for mm-hmm. a long time. He was an outstanding doctor.
Mm-hmm.
Dr. Lucido, I can remember Bob Bowman, our old trainer, he's the one who recommended him.
Yeah.
to me when he came up to see me. He said, here's a guy went to St. Louis University selling papers and doing his study and everything. Yeah. He says, he's just a hard worker. And he bust at it. He said, he's a good, outstanding doctor. So I said, well, I better take
good
him.
Enough. Yeah.
So anyway.
What, did he remove some of the lung?
Yeah, he took a segment out.
Yeah, not a whole lung, though.
No, just part of it. It's all grown back now.
Is it really? That's great.
And I never felt better in my life after that. Never had a more sore arm or anything after I come back.
But
the big thing on Dr. Lucido, Mary, my wife, has never met him.
Uh-huh.
And, of course, they were going to do the operation after I was in the hospital for about 3 months to have everything localized. Well, I got Dr. Lucido, and he came in that morning early. Of course, Mary was there before they took me in, about 7 o'clock or 6:30 in the morning.
Sure.
Dr. Lucido came in, and Mary always tells a story about he looked at Dr. Lucido and said, I'm Dr. Lucido. I'm going to do the performance on Red. I'm going to operate on him, and don't worry, he'll be all right and all of this. And Mary looked up, and he noticed where he had a cut on his cheek where he shaved that morning. And Mary always uses that story. He told Dr. Lucido after that, but Mary was there the whole time. And when he came out of the operating room, it was a long time I was in there because he was very careful that he wouldn't cut any of the muscles. And Mary said he looked like he aged about 15 to 20 years. He was in there so long. But everything turned out great.
How do you spell his name?
You got me. I wish I could.
Yeah. Doesn't matter. So you really lost that whole season. I think you only played...
I came back.
Yeah, but you...
I didn't play that much.
That's what I mean. You had, according to this, you only got into 5 games in 59.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's right.
Yeah. And then you came back to the Cardinals. Was a trade or what?
No, they released me there. Uh-huh. And that was when the expansion came.
Yeah.
And I talked with Mr. Devine, Bing Devine.
Oh, yeah. I chatted with him just the other day.
About trying to make the ball club, and he says, absolutely. He says, we'll see if you can make. We'll take you in spring training, see what you can do.
Mm-hmm.
And in the meantime, the expansion came, and that's when Fred Haney was the head of the Angels.
Mm-hmm.
He was the manager, and they called me right away, and he wanted me to join him. And I said, well, I made a promise with Bing Devine.
Yeah.
And Bing had heard about it. He says, if you care to go, he says, it's okay with me.
Bing would be that way.
Yeah,
you know?
He sure would. And then Bing, I says, no, Bing. I says, I promised you I'd come. I says, if I can't make it, I can't make it, and that's it. And he gave me a good chance. They did in spring training, and I made the ball club.
Yeah. Now, when you were with the Giants in New York and Milwaukee, did you move your family to those places, or did you keep your home here?
Well, I kept my home here, and they came in. They didn't come in. I was traded on the 15th of June.
Yeah.
Because I got back here once in a while. We had the youngsters and everything.
Yeah.
And then they didn't come into New York.
Mm-hmm.
And then the following year, I found a place with Bobby Hoffman and a few of the other ones there on Hastings on the Hudson. I had a home out there. I rented a home.
Yeah.
And that was, we were due in there the 15th of June.
Mm-hmm.
And that's when the Giants traded me. So I was...
Great timing.
I had that house in which I was paying pretty good for. It was a nice place. Mm-hmm. And the people was very nice. I signed a contract with them where I couldn't lease it out to anybody in case something happened. And it so happened that Ray Crone, when he was traded, got a hold of him right away. Mm-hmm. He had no family at the time, so I made an agreement with him. So I said, Ray says, heck, I don't make that kind of money. I said, well, I don't either, but I needed a place for the family. So I just wanted to get from under it. And I says, well, half. I says, I'll pay half. You pay the other half. You'll have a place to stay. So talked him into it.
Good deal.
That way I was maintaining a home there, really, and one here, and one in Milwaukee when I got traded.
Yeah.
So.
Did they move to Milwaukee when you were there?
Yeah, they left from there, and they stayed there for about a week, and then they flew into Milwaukee, and I had a place for them in Milwaukee.
Good. A lot of the old ball players tell me that they think the the wives are the unsung heroes of Major League Baseball. So many of them have to spend so much time, in a sense, by themselves or taking care of the family, and or else moving around all the time and never being really settled.
No question. My wife was, I didn't have to worry about anything. Mm-hmm. Or as she was with the kids, you know, you knew everything was going to be good with them, and she was going to take care of them and everything. That's one thing I didn't have to worry about. If I don't know if you remember, it was in the Sporting News a number of years ago where Marion wrote a little poem about the life of a baseball player, which was very good. They published it in the Sporting News about, you know, in them days you didn't have the Pampers or whatever they call them for the change. You had your diapers that you wore.
You're dang right.
And your formula you had to make just right, or the kids would have colic.
You think Mary's got a copy of that?
Oh, yeah, she's got a copy of that somewhere. I'm sure she has.
I'll call her up and ask her if she can let me have a copy.
All right.
I'd like to have that.
Yeah, it was very good, because I know we'd went barnstorming, American League against the National League, mm-hmm. One year where we started in Las Vegas and went through up through California. We're going to Hawaii.
Yeah.
And I know Carl Erskine and Duke Snyder and a few of the other guys on the club, they had read it at that particular time. Uh-huh. Their wives did, and they wanted a copy
of it. Sure. Yeah, Carl's another one I've talked with on tape. Now, how many children do you have, Red?
We have four. Four, three girls, and the boy was the youngest.
Kathy the oldest?
Kathy's the second.
Second.
Colleen is the oldest.
Any of them living right here now?
Colleen lives here in St. Louis. Good. Has three kiddos.
That's great.
Two boys and a girl. And Kathleen went to Notre Dame. Mm-hmm. She married
Mary told me yesterday. Didn't marry a Notre Dame man. She found another one.
He's St. Louis University. He is a hospital administrator.
Wow, she told me that.
And they were in Sheboygan, Wisconsin there for a few years after they got married, and they loved it there, as cold as it was and everything.
Yeah.
Now they're in Highland over here, which is about an hour ride.
Yeah.
And then Eileen is in Rockford, Illinois.
Uh-huh. That's a little farther.
Yeah, that's a little cold over there, too.
Yeah, true.
And Kevin, the boy, is in Orlando, Florida.
He's got it made on the weather anyway.
Well, he likes it. He says he likes it.
Sure. It's nice to
have. He was in the Chicago Cub organization for about a year and a half.
Is that right?
And he got married, and of course he couldn't cut it playing in a minor league. So
that's right.
He left baseball.
Yeah, in my younger days, I was a good amateur ball player and had an offer from a Class D league down there in Rio Grande Valley. They offered me $100 a month, and I was making more of that as a teller in a bank, and so I stayed with the bank, but it was just as well, because I discovered after a while that while I could...
What year was that?
That's back in the 20s.
Oh.
Yeah, 20s or around 30, 31.
They gave me $75 a month to play, and that's when I said I was just going to have take a shot at it and see if I can play. I wasn't married. I didn't have no responsibility. I thought baseball was a lot easier, shucking wheat and corn and things like that.
That's for sure. The curveball is what did me. And I could slam that fastball all over the place. I'd chase a little roundhouse all the way to first base.
Yeah, that's the thing.
Yeah. Anyway, when you got back here in the 60s, I had a pretty strong outfit here, too. And say in the cards. Flood and the holdovers that were around, and Bill White and Julian Javier.
Brock. Had
Sadecki and Gibson.
And had a heck of a good shortstop, you know. He was underrated, I think, Maxville.
Oh, yeah.
He was good shot. He's a winner.
Well, the Cardinals have had a history of good shortstops.
Yeah.
I think. I mean, you go back to even Hornsby. He wasn't a good shortstop, but he played shortstop a while, mostly at second base. But they've got a long lineup, and I suppose everybody would agree that the greatest one of all in the field is Ozzie. But Marion wasn't too far behind him, I don't think.
Well, it's hard to say, you know, compare ball players with them years and then. today with the different equipment. You've got your AstroTurf, you've got everything, a heck of a lot different. So
that equipment, as far as I'm concerned, makes a hell of a difference.
Oh, it sure does.
Yeah. Gloves we used just barely covered your hand.
Well, I used one, as long as I had a web in it, that's all I cared.
But you didn't see much one-handed catching in those days. That was called grandstanding.
Yeah.
So you ended your playing days in 63.
Was it 63? I don't remember. I'm glad you brought that up.
In 63.
I don't remember. I think I went up to hit about five times.
Yeah, exactly, five times, yep.
I went 0 for 5, pinch hitting.
Well,
that knocked me below 290.
Yeah, I'll be doggone. Yep. Anyway, there's so many of them tell me that sort of thing. If it hadn't been for that last season or so, I'd hit 300 or 320 or whatever, you know.
If I'd have stayed on, I think I'd have still... come back.
Of
course, they had a little problem at the time, you know, with the ball players you could keep. They had some young guys, the Cardinals did, and then if they'd have kept me on a big roster, they would have lost one or two young ones. And Bing called me up and asked me about it. And he says, there's a few ball clubs that would like to have you if you want to go, or you want to stay here, we'll just have you as a coach. I said, I'll stay here.
That's what I was going to ask. Did you stay as a coach then?
Yeah.
So you never really left the Cardinals?
No, I didn't leave. Yeah. I just stayed right there.
And from there on through here, you've been a coach?
No.
No?
I was coaching that year in 64.
Yeah.
And 63, 64, and then 65, Johnny Keene left.
You were the manager.
They made me manager.
Yeah, but I mean, you've been with the Cards. I should have...
No, I went with Oakland 2 years.
What years were those?
It was after I got fired in, as a manager after 16. Being there 12 years. So when was that?
Well, I got it here.
Uncle Charlie.
You were manager through 80.
Mm-hmm. All right, through 80. And then 81, 82, I was with Oakland as a coach.
Who was the manager there?
Well, we had Bobby Winkles and Jack McKeon, and then Bobby Winkles, and then Jack McKeon again.
Yeah,
Bobby quit. You know, he didn't get fired.
Yeah.
Bobby quit.
I've only lived here less than 2 years in St. Louis. I've been 6 years before that in San Diego, which I loved my wife and I very much. But we're both in our second marriage, having lost our spouses, each of us by strokes. And we were married in South Bend, and we decided we'd had enough South Bend winters. So we were going to California. We went out there and loved it in San Diego.
Beautiful.
Oh, it was wonderful. But between us, we have 7 children and 18 grandchildren and great-grandchildren. And we said, they got jobs and young children and couldn't travel all that much to come out and see us there. And we were wasting all our time, especially money we didn't have, coming over here and renting cars and so forth. Yeah. So we said, we got to get back to the Midwest.
Yeah.
So she has a son who's a doctor at Barnes, ear, nose, and throat. Yeah. And on our trips, we so often...
Oh, what is his name?
Goble. Joel Goble. He's a young doctor in his not quite his mid-30s, but in ear, nose, throat at Barnes. Finished at Washington U and his medical studies. And they have one little granddaughter, and they're waiting another one. She's 5 and is really something. We sure have fun with her.
Oh, yeah.
She's over at our house right now. Anyway... We had been through here many times on our travels. We'd fly in here and rent a car and go out and see our children and so forth. So we knew St. Louis fairly well, and we decided that the winters are that mild here that we could live through them, and here we are. But I got to know Jack McKeon pretty well out there in San Diego.
Yeah, I guess so.
Yeah, and a lot of the others, too. I brought out 2 years, Padre fans calendar, 85 and 86, Padre fans calendar, which I put a lot of time into and enjoyed it, and I got full, utter cooperation from the Padres and photos and everything else that I needed, and it was fun, but I didn't make a nickel off of them. In fact, I lost money on them, but anyway, it was fun. Now then, after those 2 years with the A's, you came back here.
Came back here.
And by then, Herzog was already the manager here.
No, Kenny Boyer was the manager.
Was he?
Yeah, and I came in and I coached for Kenny.
Yeah. Then the next year, probably Herzog.
Next year, Herzog came in.
Yeah. That was 83? No, it was 81.
81.
Yeah. Because Herzog was here when you won in 82.
82, we won.
That's a pretty good career in terms of time and performance and everything. And I don't have a vote, but I'm here to prophesy that sometime real soon you're going to find yourself in the Hall of Fame.
I sure hope we make it this year.
I think you're going to make it, if not this year, sometime soon. Was last year your first year eligibility? No.
No.
With the Veterans Committee, are you on that now?
Yeah, I'm on the Veterans Committee.
Well, I think that there's some guys on there smart enough to see that you make it, who know you. I mean, Bob Bragg's not the only one, but he's certainly one of them. You know. Now, think back and tell me a little about some of the colorful characters that you've brushed against in all of these places and games and so forth. Any, what's the most, anything like the greatest play you can remember anybody making or you making, or the most dramatic moment, or a player, any players who were colorful or funny or amusing incidents or any of those things that ball players are loaded with for the most part?
Well, first of all, when I was my first full year in baseball, when I was with Rochester, if I can go back that far, and Pepper Martin was my manager. And
there's no more colorful guy than
no. He, well, I could spend hours on him.
I'm sure.
And of course, he was a joker. You know, we had a preacher over there. He wouldn't pitch on Sundays, and he wouldn't. But Pepper used to play tricks on him. You know, he burned a straw hat one time in the old King Edward Hotel in Toronto. He let it down on a string off that balcony right when he was reading the paper, and that's the way Pepper was. But we had a couple of guys on the club that really couldn't get signs that well, and Pepper, he had special signs for him. And when he wanted the guys to bunt, he'd pull out a blue handkerchief out of his right pocket. And if they wanted him to hit and run, he pulled out a red one out of his left one. Right out there, he was coaching first base or either third.
Yeah.
So you remember things like that. And Pepper, one day, he got thrown out of a ball game in Rochester.
Yeah.
And this was in 43, I guess, or 44, whenever it was. And he had a garden out in left field, which was a real little fence in left field, and had a gate out there. And Pepper got violent, you know, when the umpires, you know, and before I played for him in a lower minor classification, he almost choked an umpire, they said. So he got thrown out of a ball game one Sunday afternoon in Rochester. And he finally left, and he went in the clubhouse, changed his clothes, and came back out and called time. He didn't change his clothes, still had his uniform on. He walked in the middle of the diamond, hollered time, and he kept walking. He went to left field, jumped over the fence, and watered his victory garden out there. That was Pepper Moore. That's a few things of Pepper.
Terry Moore told me a bunch of them about Pepper. That he and Dizzy and others, but Pepper was pretty much the ringleader.
That was before my time here with them guys playing.
As
far as you know, coming up, you know, not being in the big leagues and just spending a year and a half in the minor leagues and reading about different great ball players here with St. Louis, the Browns, and the Giants and everything, the Yankees. And as you remember, we played the Yankees. The Yankees were in St. Petersburg, Florida, spring training with the Cardinals, and we played them in seven ball games every year. And that was a big thrill for me. You know, you read about guys like Joe DiMaggio and Charlie Keller and all them guys in them days. And, you know, I was sort of amazed to watch Joe play DiMaggio, how he could play center field and how he could do everything. He run well. He knew how to slide. And I got a great education
just watching him.
Just watching him and sliding into second base, he hit a ball down the left field line, which I always remember, and our left fielder threw it in, and he got it there in time, and he tried to get around me, and he hook slide, and went in with his feet, pulled it back, and tried to get into his hand, but I had the bass pretty well smothered, and I said, oh, that guy don't only know how to play the outfield and hit, but he can slide, he knows how to run and everything else. And
he knew it all.
That was one thing. And then you met Ted Williams, you know, Ted was an outstanding hitter. I loved to watch him. We only played him a couple of times, unless we played him in a World Series or an All-Star game a few times. But other than that, I remember one thing about Ted. We went over to Sarasota where they trained, and we usually left your address right there in their park or in the hotel there. It was different than it is today. And, later on in Ted's years when he was still playing his last 2-3 years, at that time there'd be a few pitchers would get traded from the National to the American League, and Ted, I can remember him one day, first time I saw him that spring, he came up to me, there's a couple of National League pitchers went over to the American League, and he sat down there, he wanted to know what their best pitch was, what they threw with two strikes, do they have a hard breaking ball, what kind of control do they have, and what they like to throw with two strikes. And so he was he wanted to know everything about it. That's why he was such a great player.
Yeah, he was the probably as intense in studying all of that and figuring it all out as any batter we've had in recent years. Recent
he was
times.
A great hitter.
How was Gibson as a person to handle and so forth?
Determined guy he was when he was
still
pitched.
Is, yeah.
And Bob, never one thing I liked about him so much, he never did ever talk to the visiting ball players, which, you know, years ago you never saw that.
Oh, that's right.
You never saw anybody talk
to him. There's pretty much of it.
When we went out there as a player and when Gibson was pitching, you went out. That was war.
It was war.
That's the way it was. And now everybody gathers around a
batting
cage, they get out there 2 o'clock at a 7 o'clock, 7:30 game. They're out there at 3 o'clock talking with one another. But years ago, that's one thing about Bob. He was determined. He knew how to pitch. He knew he had good stuff, and he didn't like to be taken out of a ball game. There's no question. But nobody does.
That's right.
And but he was great to have on the ball club for the reason that you lost three in a row. And you had him pitching on that fourth day, you had a pretty good chance of winning it.
He was the stopper. It was undoubtedly an awful disappointment to him and to the Cardinals to lose that last game to Detroit in 68.
Well, it is. It was at that time. And, you know, it happens that way so many times. And when getting back to Milwaukee in 58, when I was with Milwaukee, we had the Yankees down 3-1, just like we had Detroit down 3-1 in 68, and they come back and beat us.
Yeah.
A few breaks here, a few breaks there, you know, and it can happen.
Now, well, obviously the two teams have got to be outstanding or they wouldn't be there when they're in the series.
Anytime you get into a series, sometimes the best club don't win.
That's right.
Sometimes the best club don't
win
in the National League.
Which can happen in a short series.
Yeah.
Even if you made it 8 out of 15, the best team wouldn't always win. Breaks and other things.
That's right.
Yeah.
That's part of the game.
That's
you know,
it.
You,
that's part of the...
you'll have a close call go against you, or you'll have a close call go for you, and this makes a difference once in a while in a ball game. And especially, like you say, in a short series.
Yeah. What's the attitude of ball players these days on the possibility of using TV instant replay to check up on the umpire's decisions?
Oh, I really hadn't talked to any of the ball players about it, but
myself,
I wouldn't like it.
I wouldn't either.
No, I wouldn't like it. I don't think the ball players would either. And
I don't think so.
I think it's a good idea, too, that the Umpires Association, the umpires themselves, will not let them flash it out, you know, on a close play. On the
Oh, ball. Absolutely.
That's a
good way to start a riot.
Yeah, but I don't think the ball players would want it. I know I wouldn't. The umpires are only human, you know. They're only going to be 50% right, you know, on the close play. The other clubs say, well, he's out, you're safe or this and that. But they have a tough job.
They've got a tough job, and actually the replays even show that they're right 90s percent of the time.
Usually with umpires that I've seen over the course of the years I've been playing, and the big thing is the umpires, if they hustle, I know all the managers that I ever played for, when umpires hustle, you know, they don't have that much beef with them, you know. If it's a close play, they'll argue with them, and then the umpires expect you to come out on a close play. I'm sure they do. But when the umpires hustle, you're going to get a good game.
Why are so many of the umpires these days overweight?
I don't know.
But it seems like more of them now than used to be. I don't remember.
Some of them were bigger than years ago. Some of them were taller, too, than they were years ago.
Right. All right. What about expansion? Up to now, do you think that it's diluted the quality of play any?
Well, I don't know. Diluted the quality of play, I'd say the one big reason is, I think, in the big leagues, you don't have the minor leagues that you had years ago. Yeah. When I broke in, I think they had 25 minor league clubs, or 20, something like that, in the Cardinal organization. And they just don't have it anymore. Mm-hmm. And I do believe that a lot of your good athletes today that could be ball players are playing football, basketball, and a lot of guys forget, but a lot of them good athletes are playing golf, these young kids that could be maybe pitching or...
Until after World War II, baseball had almost a monopoly on pro sports.
That's why there were so many minor leagues, and that's why you've seen more.
Yeah.
I'd have to say there was more better ball players than there are. There's a lot of great ball players today, but were just more of them because there was more minor leagues.
That's right. The pitching this past season, which suddenly turned pretty mediocre all over, is that because they're bringing the pitchers up too fast?
Well, I think one reason is that you're playing 162 ball games to where we used to play 154, and we only had 8 teams in each league. So I think that makes a difference with a pitcher. They do a lot of pitching. Mm-hmm. And of course,
they've got a lot of relief pitchers. They don't pitch as many innings, the starters, for the most part, as they used to, and they don't pitch as many complete games and all of that, but it's like the equipment, the gloves and so forth. It's a different ball game with the relievers being as important as the starters now.
Yeah, and if you get a starter that is a good athlete, pitching, that can field his position as well as have pretty good stuff, he's going to stay out there a little longer than the...
Ordinarily. There are exceptions like Goose Gossage, who is in no position to field anything after he throws the ball. But anyway, would you agree that expansion didn't dilute the quality much up to this point because of the influx of black players and Hispanic players?
I think that helped tremendously. No question about it.
But now we can't count on that to help when they expand some more, which they're going to do.
Well, I guess they will one of these years.
Yeah.
And maybe that if they do expand, maybe we can get some of these ball players, these football players and basketball players and golfers. Mm-hmm. Maybe they'd go to baseball. And I know baseball is hard to play. I know golf is hard to play, but...
Not as hard.
When you have to hit that little ball and know who's running and the guy throwing a ball at you and this and that, it makes a difference. But we might have more of them come around to baseball.
Baseball is more demanding in the sense that you've got 162 games in 175 days or something, plus spring training and everything else. And golf, you're playing so many tournaments, but it's more relaxed, I'm sure, till you're out there hitting the ball.
Yeah, that's right. But I think in the next couple of years they probably will expand.
Mm-hmm.
But
very likely.
I don't think it would hurt, you know.
No, I don't either. The fans, I think, would respond properly, even if the level goes down, it's imperceptible to the ordinary fan, up to a point anyway, and they like to see the game, and if the pitching isn't quite what it once was, a lot of the fans don't realize that because they're new fans coming up all the time.
Quality of the players are about equal on each club, yeah. And this is what
there's
I mentioned.
There's more parity than used to be, I think. Presumably the National League would expand by two teams to even off the two leagues of 14, but that's not the end of it. I think they're probably going to go to 15 or 16 in the foreseeable future. And there are guys that are proposing dividing, getting 32 teams and dividing them into four leagues geographically.
Mm-hmm.
And putting like the White Sox and the Cubs and Milwaukee and St. Louis and maybe Detroit, and, all in one league. And getting the rivalry between the Mets and the Yankees, for instance, in the same league, and so forth, would save enormously, of course, on travel costs if they were closely bunched like that. And the rivalry would keep the fans coming out and so forth. I don't think it's going to happen.
I don't think it'll happen right away.
No, not right away, but it has some merit to think about.
Talking with president of the National League, Mr. Giamatti, mm-hmm. during the playoffs, having breakfast with him one day, and he said, I mentioned to him, I says, I see where St. Petersburg is going through with their ball club, where they're building it.
Yeah.
He says, yeah. He says, we have never promised them anything, and I don't know why they're doing it. He says, but
they're gambling.
Yeah, I guess they are. And he says, there'll be no expansion. I know. He says, for the next 2 years.
No, I'm sure of that.
And of course, I guess they figure they got a baseball park up to get a better chance.
They're figuring, I suppose, two ways. Expansion is one, and maybe luring a present franchise that's in trouble, Seattle. Or
mm-hmm.
The Giants wanted to move, but I think they're going to stay in that area for a while anyway.
Mm-hmm.
How about the artificial surface? You never played on it, did you?
No, I never did play on it.
What do you think about it?
Well, I think, like here in St. Louis with a football team, I think you need it. They play soccer on that field, they play football, they play baseball. And with the rain that you have in the beginning of the year,
mm-hmm.
that field would be tore up. I don't think you could play as many baseball games as we have without being rained out.
No, there'd be more postponements, no question. And you get the true bounce on that.
And the true bounce, I'd have to say that. I would have to say, I'm sure it's a little harder on your legs than regular turf.
A lot of people, like Dawson, for instance, I think he's going to last longer in Chicago than he would have in Montreal.
Probably would have.
Yep.
But you've still got a few fields that you play on, but when you're, like here in mm-hmm. St. Louis or Montreal, you got your AstroTurf, and you're going to play on it. I mean, 62 or 81
games a year.
All games, and it makes a difference. They're running on it. Mm-hmm. I know when we moved over from the old ballpark to the new ballpark, we mm-hmm. didn't have AstroTurf, but that following year, I guess it was. Let's let it ring.
All right.
That following year, we had the AstroTurf for one of the years, and mm-hmm. the difference you could tell the way the pitchers, when they run before the game, they mm-hmm. they complain about their legs
about
a little
that?
Bit because that was we were other than Houston was the only ball club that really had AstroTurf at that time.
Yeah. What about free agency?
Well, I had nothing to do with it. And I hate like heck to say anything, but I can remember Dick Meyer when he was the big man for Mr. Bush. He mm-hmm. says that's one rule you should never let. In the baseball free agency,
mm-hmm.
or not free
That's
agency, not free agency. He was talking about
arbitration.
Arbitration.
Yeah.
He said that's one rule you should not have in is arbitration.
Yeah. I think there is more support for free agency than for arbitration, really. And from the player's point of view, it's a great thing. But from management point of view, it's been difficult.
Well, that's right. Today, You see where you had a Musial and a Ted Williams and a DiMaggio and the Mantles and guys like that. You knew they were going to be back on that ball club. And you had your hero and you wanted to come out and see them. But now with the, after so many years, they go here, go there. And
much more movement,
A lot more movement.
Yeah, without being traded. They go on free agency. Well, in your day, the knockdown pitch was still pretty common.
Oh, yeah.
And nobody went rushing out to the mound to challenge the pitcher after he was knocked down.
Not that much.
That's right. It happened, but rarely.
You knew that the pitcher was going to throw at you. I mean, come close. Like Mr. Rickey would say, that's a purpose pitch.
Sure.
And they throw it close, and they hit you a lot of time.
Oh, yeah.
They didn't mean it a lot of time, but they were going to get it in there to where they could get it in there. And
occasionally they would mean it, but they would be hitting you on the rump or the back or somewhere, not at the head.
Yeah, that's right. They
and, of course, you didn't have batting helmets in your day.
No batting helmets. Yeah.
All of these old-timers talk about how they were knocked down, especially as rookies.
That was a big thing.
And Glenn Wright says, I think it's Burley Grimes knocked him down on one pitch, and he got up and he knocked him down on the second pitch. And so he says, and then he got hit and was out for weeks. Really was unconscious for 36 hours, and he came back and he was worried. And in the very first game, he gets knocked down. And he gets up and says, well, if I can get out of the way of that one, I can get out of the way of anything, I guess. So he was all right thereafter. But it was more of a mental block in those days for a batter to go up there and know that he was apt to get pounded.
Well, it's true. When you know it, you're going to get pitched way inside. Yeah. You know, it's going to be different. I think really, you were more, I don't know how to put it, where you really didn't dig in, a lot of times. And you know when to dig in with some of them big hitters and when not to, depending on who's pitching and what had happened. And
circumstances.
I think it made you a better hitter, really.
That's a good point.
I think it made you a better hitter when they brushed
good
you
point.
Back and you got any moxie about you at all. You know, you come back fighting and not running out on the mound, but doing it with the bat. And I do believe right now the strike zone is different. I don't know if you're going to ask me this. And I think there would be better hitters today if they would call strikes like they used to call them and balls the way they used to call them.
At least up to here.
Yeah. Yeah. I think you'd have more aggressive hitters and you have better hitters.
Mm-hmm.
I know one thing, you'd have faster games.
Yeah, that's right. Which a lot of people want. But on the other hand, fans will say they want faster games, but they also want a lot of home runs and running and hits and so forth.
Yeah.
And they're contradictory, those two wishes. Can't have both of them, I don't think. But George Uli and some of the other old-timers tell me they pitch a game in an hour. Not be surprised that it ended so fast. Had another question, and it eludes me right now. But go ahead. Ball players are business people these days as well as ball players, which wasn't so much the case in the old days.
I think that's due to the agent more than anything.
Agent and the escalation of salaries.
Well, that's true.
Ball players don't talk baseball as much as they used to among themselves.
Well, I think it was a different era all the way back, when we were playing, you travel on a train.
That's right.
And you were together.
And you played day games.
And they played day games, is right.
Yeah. Everything in that sense has changed. There are many things, and you've got to adjust to the times. What about the long-term, guaranteed, no-cut contracts?
Well, that's the time change, I'm sure. But, you'd never get more than 1 year contract years ago when we were playing.
That's right.
They didn't want to have you tied up or where they couldn't trade you.
Mm-hmm.
And now, of course, you put in the contract also where you're going to trade me. I don't want to be traded here. I don't want to be traded there.
Yep.
So they've got, this free agency made a lot of this, I'd have to say.
Sure.
I don't know if it makes for better a ball player or worse or what, but it's more business, like you said, now than it used to be by far.
And it's that's true at the management level, too. A lot of the owners in the old days were owners because they were wealthy and they were baseball fans and they did it for the fun. Now the owners, for the most part, are doing it for the money.
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
And it takes a lot of money to run a ball club.
TV has made all of that possible.
TV has changed baseball, so much.
In many, many ways.
All sports it has.
Not all for the best.
No, I mean, just like your TV has changed not only baseball, but football, and the big thing that I see where it changed is golfing. You've got a weekend golfer, they got to go like the pros, they got to look up, and they can't hit the ball, they ain't going to get any better no matter what they do, and they'll walk up to the green or try to walk around the green. That's why they're going to see more golf clubs pretty soon.
What about the designated hitter?
I really don't like it.
Most of them don't.
I really don't like it. I think it takes a little finesse away from the manager, and also
definitely does that.
The pitcher himself. Now, years ago, when I was playing, you had some pretty good athletes that was pitchers, were pretty good hitters. They could handle the bat, not only hit a home run, but they could hit and run with him and everything else. You just don't see pitchers hit. I guess it's because
it's
even
natural, it's logical.
They don't do it in the minor leagues. They don't do it in college anymore. Yeah. Like Kingman, he was a outfielder, or he was a pitcher.
Yeah,
outfielder, and they are a pitcher, and then he let him hit, of course, and then he hit once in a while after. I guess that's why. And there's so many other ones now.
Mm-hmm.
If you're a pitcher, you don't hit, and I think it's not good. I like to see the minor leagues, especially, have the pitchers hit. Just like they do in the National League.
Well, at the very least, they ought to have the two major leagues the same, either with it or without it, both of them.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I think it takes away a lot of times, you know, you got a tough ball game, you got a close ball game, where in the American League, he's still pitching a good ball game in the seventh inning. They got a man on second and a man on third. Now you can put a pinch hitter in there for him, and they just don't make their designated hitter.
Yeah, it makes a lot of difference in that sense and in the maneuvering that the manager can do. Yeah. All right. So, what do the Cards need most to be sure, you can't be sure, but to have the best chance of holding on, winning again next year?
Well, we have to have everything go the way it went this year for us. We were pretty
with fewer injuries.
With fewer injuries, and we'd like to have Jar Clark back healthy. It was a big thing, and of course our third baseman, he played all year hurt, and nobody really knew it.
Mm-hmm.
He's a tough little player.
Sure is.
Terry is, and he played hurt, and he wanted to play in that World Series so bad, but he couldn't even swing right-handed, and he couldn't throw. His side was bothering him, and you get him healthy, and along with Clark, and
you still have hopes that Lindemann is going to come through as a hitter?
Well, we're hoping so.
Yeah.
We hope so. And to see what you have in the minor leagues, I'm anxious to see this spring what kind of pitching. I know they got three or four of them coming up, and they may not be ready, but talking with Lee Thomas, who's ahead of the minor leagues, he said there's a couple of them pitchers you're going to look at. He said they're going to catch your eye. He says they may not be ready. He said they might be ready before the year's over. So that's encouraging.
Sounds good.
But we need somebody. You can't have, of course, we got Oquendo. He plays all over.
He's something.
And he's a good shortstop.
Everybody wants him.
Yeah, he's a good shortstop. A hell of a shortstop. He can play that outfield.
Yep.
He plays second base. You know, he never played second.
He played third even. Well, he's played everything third, except pitch, except catch.
Catch, yeah. But you got a guy like that on your club. He's not a power hitter, but you got to have him. And you got to have Willie McGee in good shape, you know. And,
he had some problems this year.
You got to hope for.
But the prospect is bright, nevertheless.
Well, the way Lee don't like to talk about it too much, but I was in the office about a month ago, and I looked at the list, 40-man roster, and he was telling me there's some, and there's a few other ones that can play. He says they may not be ready, that are in double-A ball, moved to triple-A. He says they, to what he sees, what everybody else has in the minor leagues and what we have, he says, we've got some pretty good-looking prospects.
I'm sure. And the Mets didn't get Bob Welch.
No, they didn't. He's a good pitcher.
He sure is.
Yeah, he's a good pitcher. Yeah. I'm really surprised, though, looking at the paper this morning about they had a chance, the Dodgers, to get Mookie Wilson, didn't they, and Santana?
Yeah. I don't know. Some of those trades make you wonder.
And Mookie Wilson's a pretty good player.
You're doggone right.
I'm telling you, he can play center field, and he's not the greatest, but
he's real good.
He can hit, he can run, he can do a lot of things for you. He's the type you like to have on the club.
Mm-hmm.
But they got that Howe from over there, and I guess he's pretty good. I don't know him. From Oakland.
Yeah, he's done and off and on pretty well.
Griffin or whatever his name is, I don't know him.
Well, he was great, but I think he's past his best.
Mm-hmm.
I was surprised when they put such a high value on him. He was injured, I think, this past year.
That's Santana. He's not a flashy player, but he gets the job done.
He's good.
He get a big hit now and then for you. And I always did like, kind of like this Santana. I say one thing for Johnson. He put him out there and let him out there, and they stayed right in there with him. They couldn't find anybody else to take his job.
He did well enough. Oquendo, I'm sorry, Orozco, maybe on the downgrade.
Well, he could, with all the pitching he done. But
the relievers change, frequently.
Yeah, but a change with another ball club might help. It helps
him rejuvenate a lot of people.
Yeah. It sounded like he was dissatisfied there, as with the paper said this morning.
He really was, he was no longer the top dog in that bullpen. Well, it'll be another interesting season.
I think it will be. Hoping that we can get everybody signed up, and hope Clark's all right. I think we'll battle.
Yeah.
One thing about our club, I have to say, as long as I've been with the Cardinals, we've always had an exciting ball club. You're going to get 100%.
And a fighting ball club.
Yeah, no matter who's the manager or what and what.
They didn't have any reason to expect to win this past year with all of the loss, all of the injuries and so forth, and looked like they were down and out when they went in to play the Mets and Pendleton homers and turns everything around.
That was a big turn.
One of the biggest hits of the season,
And then, when they brought somebody up from the minor leagues,
they
walk up there and get a big base hit.
Yeah.
And if you can do that, you can win.
You sure can. Well, good luck, and I appreciate very much you taking time to chat with me.
Well, thank you, and I hope I gave you enough.
You gave me lots of good stuff, Red, and I'll put something together, and I'm working toward another book now, and I've got about half a dozen or so people already, and I'm going to put in this time, instead of just all players, I've got...
Is this the new one?
No, that's up through 84.
Mm-hmm.
There is a newer one, which I don't have. This one cuts off at 84 also, but it's very valuable. Give it a play-by-play of every World Series game and so forth.